This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to yet another edition of the Kona Edge. I am Brad Brown. Thank you for joining me from Brighton, sunny Cape Town in South Africa. I hope you're well wherever you are on the planet. I keep asking for them and I get a few every now and again, but let me know where you listen to the podcast. I love sort of seeing people's environments and what they're doing when they're listening. So unless you're driving, don't do this, okay? But or riding a bicycle for that matter. But yeah, take a selfie. Let me know where you're listening. I love seeing people's pain caves or where they're running. Take a selfie and tag the Kona Edge on social media. I'd love to see what you're up to, or simply just use the hashtag the Kona Edge, and I'll find them there and give you a shout out on social media as well. Coming up on today's podcast, I touch base with another incredible athlete, and can't wait to share his story. And before we do that and head over to Rob Dalymore, let's touch base with the Coach's Corner. Today's Coach's Corner is brought to you by Susan Kitchen at Race Smart. As a lifelong endurance athlete, Susan, the owner of Race Smart, has an up-close and personal understanding of the challenges many endurance athletes encounter. From sports nutrition to a training program designed specifically around your busy lifestyle, Susan has completed more than 25 marathons, more than 20 half marathons, 8 Ironmans, and is a 2-time Kona qualifier. Regardless of your athletic ability, age, or fitness level, proper nutrition, developing healthy habits, and consistent training play a fundamental role in supporting your health and performance goals. Whether your focus is weight loss, improving performance, or managing a health condition in an active lifestyle, Susan's expert insights and personalized attention will help you overcome obstacles, optimize your nutrition, and achieve athletic excellence. Race Smart's Susan Kitchen is a board-certified sports-registered dietitian, Level 2 Endurance USAT coach, Ironman coach, and holds a master's in nutrition. Race Smart services include sport and daily nutrition consultations, sweat and electrolyte testing, and personalized triathlon coaching. If you'd like to find out more about what Susan is up to at Race Smart, all you need to do is head over to racesmart.com or simply head over to thekonaedge.com/coaching and you can click straight through from there. If you're a coach and you'd like to be featured in the Coach's Corner, all you need to do is head over to that URL as well. It's thekonaedge.com/coaching. Scroll all the way down to the bottom of that page for more details. We head to the land of the long white cloud now. We go to New Zealand, the North Island to be precise, in Auckland. Rob Dalymore joins us. Rob, welcome onto the Kona Edge. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks very much, Brad. Thank you.
Rob, it's awesome to catch up. I've had a few Kiwis on. One of the more famous age groupers in New Zealand is Dr. Daniel Plews. He's done some amazing things with your rowing team. But yeah, tough to have another Kiwi on.
Yeah, thank you very much. He's been a great athlete over the years and someone to aspire to, but not necessarily keep up with.
No, absolutely. He's a machine. You raced Kona this year. It's not too long after race day. How's the body holding up?
Oh, this has been quite a hard road back for me this year. It's for some reason I picked up a bit of a flu bug on the flight home, I think, and since then I've been hit pretty hard, so I haven't really done anything since I got home, and I kept on losing weight. So while I'm losing weight and not feeling 100%, I'm just lying low and letting things sort of tick over. But I had my surprise 40th birthday on Saturday night, so I had to push the limits a little bit there. But give me a couple more days, I'll be back to normal.
Yeah, it's all good. It's post-Kona, so you're allowed to hang out on the dark side for a while.
That's right. That's what I thought.
Rob, you've been around the sport for quite a while. Tell me a little about your introduction to triathlon.
Yeah, well, I mean, it goes back to the early 90s. So I was a good runner, and then when I went to college, the guy that was the main triathlete at school was Cameron Brown, who obviously doesn't need any introduction. So having him participating well in the sport, and me being relatively influential and young, I was told to follow him and do what he does. So I basically got into the triathlon club at school and started learning swim, bike and run, and haven't looked back from there really. And we're pretty lucky in New Zealand because it's great through summer. We're a really active community and we've had a lot of good triathletes over the years that we can look up to. So it's just been easy to just to get in, go season by season and just keep improving.
And from a race perspective, it's always great to have a nice, a decent Ironman race close to where you are, and you've got one of the most beautiful in the world.
Yeah, well, I grew up watching the Auckland Ironman, which was always on my doorstep, and sort of became fascinated with the sport there. But I never had a chance to race the Auckland one, which is a shame because I still think that was the true Ironman course. That was the tough hilly, tough course, and we train on it a lot actually. It's a local area for us to train in. But when it went to Taupo, I raced there in 2003 for my first time. And it's a fantastic place to race. So we love Taupo. We go there a lot. I've raced it 11 times now. So for some reason I keep going back.
That's incredible. I always say to people, I mean, if you are going to travel a bit, like New Zealand's a long way to go. I've never been, but I've seen pictures of that race. And as much as it's a crazy long flight, I think it's definitely worthwhile putting in the hours to get there.
Yeah, I mean, we travel to events for holiday as well, and it's nice to go to an event which is at a great location, and Taupo is one of those. And I've done a few races overseas where, you end up in some amazing places. So, you know, Taupo is a good spot, but I've raced in Cairns and Kona and Penticton in Canada and Busselton. So, you know, you always find a nice place to have a holiday and do a race at the same time.
Isn't it too funny that you pick your holiday destinations depending on where the races are?
Yeah, that's the way it goes, isn't it?
I love that. Rob, you told me before we started recording that you come from a running background. So as much as you got involved with the triathlon sort of club at school and that, you were a decent runner in your day.
Yeah, I used to race cross country, and I was never the best. I was never winning in races, and I never really went down the track race. I sort of stuck to cross country and. But you know, you learn some good habits running cross country, and you develop some good leg strength. So when it came to jumping on a bike, I was light and I was pretty strong for my body weight, for my age, and it just seemed to go up hills pretty well on a bicycle. It didn't really equate to swimming particularly well, and it's still a bit of a handicap of mine. I'm not the fastest swimmer around, but I'm getting on top of things there. But I've certainly fall back on my running. How I have in the past in the triathlon, where it's sort of been nice to have the last leg as the strongest. But I'm not running as fast as I used to, which is a bit of a shame. I think it's just age, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, unfortunately. But we'll chat more about that, I'm sure. Talk to me a little bit about growing up in New Zealand. You mentioned the running. I hate to say it because we've got lots of Aussies and Brits that listen, and South Africans listen to the podcast. New Zealand's a massive rugby nation. Did you play a bit of rugby growing up?
I played very, very infrequently and at a very young age. In fact, I think I played before tackle rugby was allowed, so I think I got away from playing too much rugby. And I think the only time I ever did really play was I was running around the field more than anything. And so I don't think I held the ball too much.
Were you a competitive kid? Did you hate losing?
Yeah, I hate losing. Yeah. I mean, but I never won that much, so I figure... I just kept on fighting to try and win something, so I just didn't want to be last. And I seem to get away with it all right, but you know, I just love a challenge, I love a battle. Every time I line up on a race, I think, oh, surely I can win this one. You know, it doesn't really matter what the outcome is, but as long as I go into the battle with the attitude of, oh, you know, maybe I could sneak this win, we'll see.
Do you think that sort of mental attitude is paramount if you want to become a top class age grouper?
Yeah, I think you've always got to find ways to push yourself, and I've had a pretty good season this year where I've gone into races specifically with one goal, and I've come away with that goal. So I think, you know, if I really spend the time and put my mind to it, and if I think it's a realistic goal, I've generally got a pretty good shot of achieving them. So that's quite satisfying to sort of go at something, put a plan together and execute it on race day and come away with a result. So, yeah, it's good.
Rob, how's your approach to triathlon changed since you started, like you said, in the mid-90s to what you are now? Obviously, lots of factors have changed. You've gotten a bit older, as you said. The way you do things now, is it very different to what it was back then?
Yeah, it's hugely different. So, I mean, I was never it took a few years before I sort of picked up a coach. So all through my, other than what we had at school, so all through my junior years, I was sort of learning just by making mistakes, and nothing was really that specific. When I came to do Ironman, I decided I needed a coach, so I enlisted a coach, and I'd had one for a couple of years. But then I sort of stepped off on my own and decided to coach myself, and that's where I developed my own coaching business. So I've always kept a pretty close eye on how the sport's evolved and training principles and equipment and you know, philosophies and stuff like that, and about how we can get more out of ourselves. So the last few years, I'm every year I go from season to season, I'm learning something new, I'm trying new things, and I'm sort of developing new techniques. So I've sort of seen technology really unfold these last 5 years or so, where age groupers are becoming so technologically savvy with equipment that it's just incredible how much things have progressed. You know, and you got people coming into Ironman for the first time, posting much, much faster times for their first Ironmans than they have in the past, you know, than we've seen other debut athletes in the past. And I think it's just a sign that the technology has moved on so much further, and you know, you can get so much more out of our devices and from what we've had experience with other people in the past. It's exciting.
You mentioned sort of more people coming into the sport and getting faster and faster. What I'm seeing is there's a lot of athletes coming from other sporting codes, and I think a good example is, well, there's a couple of examples, is Lucy Charles, who finished second in the ladies' pro race in Kona this year. We chatted to her on the Kona Edge about 2 years ago, and she comes from a swimming background. I mean, she was Olympic-level swimmer. So as much as it's very different skills, we are seeing more of that. I think of just people we've had on this podcast. Joe Coombe, as an example, played international rugby for Wales. And do you think with athletes like that coming into the sport, if you're not keeping up with the tech, you're on the back foot to start with? Is it paramount that you are up to date with sort of power and all the sort of new things that are coming into the sport?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, the stuff's so accessible now, and it's not really that expensive to equip yourselves with pieces of equipment that are so reliable and effective that it's almost become a no-brainer, and it's just a very, very easy thing to do to ensure that you're getting more and more out of yourself. I mean, you talk about athletes coming from other sports. Some of the best triathletes I've seen have come from a rowing background, and I think it's just the way that they can just push themselves so hard to their limits and can get in so tuned with themselves and have no problems about training at ridiculous hours of the day for long, long periods of time, have developed an enormous VO2 max or VO2 bases that they can just tap into those so well. And I think then adding to that the technology in the sport just opens up the opportunities for those athletes to sort of push themselves further and further.
What do you think has been the biggest tech advancement in the sport, as you say, in the last 5 years?
I was asked this in a radio interview in New Zealand actually a few years ago, and my answer then is probably the same. I think it was the GPS watch, because I think obviously the power meter has made a big difference, but the way the GPS has developed over time has become so accurate, and it's so easy to use and to carry with you and cheap, that it just turns a recreational person into having the same equipment that the elite person will have with a very, very small cost. And it's real time, and it's accurate, and it's useful information. So I think the GPS is probably one of the most important pieces of technology in the last few years. Although as we see power meters developing through swimming, biking and running, I think that might possibly surpass depending on how they develop over time.
So interesting you say that, because everyone talks about power, and you're so right about the GPS watch. I mean, it's the amount of data that you've got access to is ridiculous if you've got one. Obviously, if you know what you're doing, and you talk about coaching, and you've moved away and you self-coach now. You've got a coaching business. I look at other sporting codes, I look at golf, and the top golfers in the world have got sort of swing coaches and that sort of thing. Do you get help, or are you is it, you know, textbook stuff and you can figure it all out yourself?
No, I get help. So I'm lucky enough to work as a swim squad coach for Rick Wells, who is obviously a very well-known New Zealand triathlete and from the past. And so he's, Rick's a fantastic swim coach. And so I've sort of used Rick's advice over the last 3 or 4 years just to get on top of my swimming, which has been great. And Rick's got some staff, that work under him as well. Dan Feist, for example, was a, New Zealand, swim coach, and, his technique skills are huge. So, I think those two guys have been a great help on my swimming. Cycling, it's a little bit different. I tend to just ride to myself and to feel, but I use a power meter as well. But in terms of technique and position, I have a very good friend of mine who's called Greg Payne, and he's a biomechanist. He runs a company called Biosport, and he and I work very closely at developing core strength and optimizing my bike position. And I think that's helped a lot over the years. And that's translated across to my running as well, where he and I sort of look closely at optimizing my run gait and core, core strength and posture. And I use and we also analyze the data that I get from my Stride footpod power meter, and so bring it all in together. So I certainly don't rely just on my own assessment of my training. I rely heavily on other people around me, which I think have been a great help for me the last few years.
Looking at your triathlon career to date, what would you say you're most proud of?
I think getting to Kona 3 times and not really having a bad race. I think I'm pretty proud of that actually. Every time I've gone there, obviously I've trained in New Zealand through winter, which is a challenge. Particularly this winter was a really, really wet, just a miserable, miserable winter. And to get to Kona after spending the whole winter in New Zealand training is a real, without getting injured or sick, is quite a feat. So to get to Kona 3 times and to have been healthy and fit and still be able to race and put together good races, I think I'm pretty proud of that. So the first time I went 9:50. The next time I went was 9:40, and this time I went 9:50 again, which I was hoping would be a bit faster than that. But neither of those races ended up in an explosion. They always held together pretty well. So that was good. I had a really neat race at the Long Course Tri Worlds in August this year in Canada, where I came fourth in my age group, which was a result that really surprised me. And I think the other one was probably I won my age group at the Half Ironman Champs this year, which was a race I was surprised to do, but I had that real specific goal. I wanted to go out and win it, and I just raced aggressively from the start, and I came away with a win, which was quite neat. However, I suffered a nasty Achilles injury through the race, and I couldn't run for the next 4 months afterwards, so probably paid the price for that.
but you've got the title. That's all that matters, Rob.
yeah. It was a frustrating 4 months after it, though.
I'm sure. What's the secret to having a good race on the Big Island? I mean, we've chatted to guys that have been back year after year after year, and just like you say, blow up. They just cannot dial it in. In your mind, what does it take to race the perfect race on the Big Island?
Okay, so I think the most important thing is to respect the distance and the conditions even more than you would if it was your first Ironman. So regardless of how many times you've been back, I think it's always to go into it knowing that this race is going to kick your ass, and it doesn't care who you are or how fit you are. If you don't go about it the right way, it's going to be a miserable day for you. So every time I've raced there, I've had that attitude, and it's seemed to work right for me, because I go into the swim with the goal of I just want to get off the start line fast and clean, but then settle into my work and not push myself too hard. So obviously keep myself out of trouble. Once I get settled down, find a group, stay in the group. Don't get drifted off the back. Don't find myself isolated. Don't have to fight a speed that I'm not comfortable doing. And then getting out of the water onto the bike, settling into that rhythm, not getting caught up in chasing bunches or chasing riders down, just letting the first 60 or 80 Ks unfold, and then coming home knowing that there's going to be a headwind the last 60 K, coming home with the energy to know that I can keep pushing through, but not going to the point that I'm actually really, really getting tapped into my resources. And then if I know if I've come off the bike feeling like I haven't really ridden 180 Ks, I know that I've been in a race, but it hasn't really been that taxing, then I know that the run's going to be it's going to be good. But I still go into the run with the first hour and a half of, you know, respecting the course, respecting the race, knowing that it's still a tough way to go. And then once I'm at the energy lab, turning around, coming back, it's all in. And I don't care about anything there. I don't care about who I'm racing or what the conditions are. It's just get me home as fast as I can. And it seemed to work all right this year. I took 15 people in the last 12K in my age group, so I was quite happy with that.
Wow, that's incredible. Talk to me about conditions. So you talk about training through New Zealand winters, and you were saying this one's particularly wet. It gets quite chilly where you are as well. How do you get your sort of body acclimatized? I mean, is it a case of just heading out to the Big Island sooner than what you would generally, or do you do some heat chamber stuff at home, basically?
So I don't really panic too much about it, because I know that it's just what it's going to be, and the human body is going to deal with conditions pretty much the same regardless of who you are and where you live. But I know it's the way it's adapted to those conditions can dictate how things can go. And if you let things get away from you, as in let your body overheat, or you run out of fuel, or you run low on fluid, then you're going to be in trouble. So as long as I was going into the race with keeping that in mind and not letting it happen to me, I knew it was going to be okay for the most part. In 2013, I went to an environmental chamber at a university here in Auckland where Dan Plews is based out of, and that was a huge help, and it actually worked really well that year. This year, I decided to not do it, and I went just for a sauna protocol, and I stuck to what I thought would have been a pretty effective protocol. But I think, however, I don't think it worked quite as well as the environmental chamber on race day when it got really, really hot. And I think the difference is because in a sauna, you're not actually exercising in those conditions. You're just sitting there. And I think the big difference is exercising in those conditions, if you can simulate that, is probably the biggest help. So I probably missed an opportunity there. I probably should have gone back to the environmental chamber this year, and I think it would have helped me a little bit in the last sort of hour and a half when it was really, really hot on the run. But, you know, other than that, I just make sure I never get cold when I'm training in Auckland in winter. We had some miserable days with some hail and driving rain and ridiculous gale force winds and freezing cold temperatures. But there was a half dozen of us training for Kona, and we're all trained together. So, you know, no one was going to give up. We're all going to push each other through. So it worked out really well for us. But yeah. It was pretty tough.
I'm sure. I mean, I trained for an Ironman through our winter here a couple of years ago, and there was no one training for an Ironman close to ours. And I mean, our winters are nowhere close to what yours are like. So, and I know how hard that was. So, yeah, getting a group of guys or girls who you can train with through it definitely will help as well. Rob, looking back at your triathlon career, what's been the biggest struggle that you've had to overcome, the biggest challenge?
So I went through a really, really long spate of getting stress fractures. I would go for probably 6 or 7 years where every year I'd get one or two, whether it was shins, or there was tibial, high tibia, low tibia, fibula. I had two in my mid shaft of my femur, left and right legs, both at the same time. Just horrible, horrible injuries. And as soon as you get one, you're out for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, you've got to build yourself back up again, and often I would recover and then get another one as soon as I started training again. And that really, really limited how well I could train and race through those times, and it was getting really, really frustrating. And so I was working closely with a sports doctor here, and we got talking a little bit about my diet. And, you know, at the time I thought I was eating pretty well because I ate a lot, but I was just eating a lot of the wrong food. And it was just crap that I was putting myself in. And I was going for the whole, you know, get as much food in me as I can. I'm all right. I'm an athlete. I'll be fine. But actually, I wasn't. I was having far too acidic foods. And I think that was probably contributing to pulling a lot of the minerals out of my bones to sort of balance out concentration in my system. And it was just giving me weaker and weaker bones. And so the more and more I train, even though I wasn't training ridiculous amounts, I would still break down, and it was just getting really, really frustrating. So I made a small change to my diet, and I just settled into it, and all of a sudden we came right. So it's been about 5 or 6 years since I had my last stress fracture, and So I haven't really looked back at that. However, I do get a bit slack sometimes, and my wife has to remind me that if I get a stress fracture, it's my own bloody fault because I'm not eating properly. So so I get pulled back into reality occasionally and make sure I'm back on it.
And if you're anything like the rest of us, if you're not training, you're grumpy as hell, so your wife knows. You need to listen.
Yeah, that's right. You don't argue.
Absolutely. What do you still want to achieve in the sport, Rob?
I don't know yet. I think, well, I'm actually pretty happy with what I've achieved so far. So I'm not really running around trying to find new things. I just want to keep going year by year, just enjoying things, still being competitive. I still want to be able to turn up to a race and feel I can have a shot at my age group. I'd love to have been able to race as a professional years ago, but I didn't have the time or the skill or the swim ability to do that. So I've missed that opportunity, which is a shame, but that's okay. But I just don't want to be able to turn up to a race, be competitive, train with my mates, enjoy the sport, and never get sick of it. And I think that's, as long as I'm doing that, I'm having fun, I'm enjoying it, it's great. And I haven't got to the point where I'm tired of the sport yet. So I've done 18 Ironmans, and I thought maybe this one might be my last, but I actually don't think it will be. I think we'll keep on going for a bit longer yet. So.
Talk to me about that, staying fresh in the sport. I mean, you say as long as you enjoy it. I'm sure you've been through patches where you've gone, you know what, I'm done with this. I've had enough. We all do. I've been through it. I'm probably going through one at the moment. Yeah. How do you keep yourself fresh and keep it interesting?
Well, I'm pretty lucky because I've got a good group of athletes that I coach. So there's always someone else who I can draw strength off. You know, there's always someone training for a world champs or training for their first Ironman. So I just have an opportunity to focus on them for a little bit, and you know, they always need a training partner, so I'll have a chance to jump in and do some riding or running with them. And you know, it I always need to have a goal to do stuff. I couldn't just be one of these people who just train for the sake of training. I always need to have a race at the end of the block. So as long as I've given myself something to focus on, you know, I can get to 3 or 4 months out from that event and I'll go, all right, now we start training for it. But until then, I'm just happy to just keep ticking along, hanging out with my mates, working with my athletes, you know, and just keeping fit and keeping healthy. I just don't want to get to a point where I have to give myself 6 or 8 weeks to build up fitness before I can start training. I want to always be fit enough that I can just turn it on straight away, give myself that block to get to a race, and then we're good to go.
Knowing what you know now, if you could go back and start your career over, what would you change? What would you tell yourself, knowing what you know now?
Go to swimming. If I could do it again, I'd be a 12-year-old club swimmer, and I'd be swimming the miles. I wish I did that when I was that age, because it would have changed things quite a lot, I think. I envy the guys and girls who can, you know, the Lucy Charles of this world, who can just dive in the water and lead the swim out. I've always wanted to lead a swim out, and I haven't done it yet, so.
Well,
I would go and swim more.
I was going to say, there's something to put on your list of what you'd like to achieve in your career.
Yeah,
as far as newbies starting out in the sport today, Rob, what advice would you give newbies? It's intimidating, to say the least, coming in, and it's compression socks and Lycra and power meters and this and that. It's easy to get overwhelmed. What do you tell the new guys that start training with you?
I think the biggest thing is to be a fan of the sport and to learn the sport by observing and watching. So, you know, seeing what people are doing, you know, whether they're the top end professionals or the other people that are new to it, just learning and experiencing it, because it is such a great sport that you can sit on the sidelines and have just take so much in. So I think if you're knowledgeable enough and you're a sponge and you take a lot of information on and you're keen to give anything a go, that's all it takes. You know, you can turn up to a race. You don't need a wetsuit unless you're too far south in the South Island. You need a bike that's working and safe, but that's fine. Doesn't have to be a real expensive bike, and you just need a pair of running shoes, and that's all it needs to be. And the more you do it, the more you learn. Suddenly decide that maybe I need a better wetsuit, go and get one of those. Finding out you need a new bike, go and get one of those, and just gradually build yourself up into the sport. The people who I find sort of lose the love of the sport will often get all the best equipment to start out with, get into it, do one or two races, and then find it's not for them, because they've sort of gone in with the expectations of being able to take it over, you know, and be great at it at the first shot. But actually, it takes a long, long time to get good at it. So yeah, just being patient, taking time, going step by step is the most important thing.
If I wanted to take an hour off my Ironman time, what would you tell me?
Ooh, that's a good question. So yeah, you're talking from going from 9 hours to 8 hours, or?
I wish. If I was 9 hours, I wouldn't be wanting to take an hour off, Rob. Let's talk from a 13 to a 12, or a 12 to 11, 11 to 10.
Yeah, I'd say three swims a week. Being comfortable sitting on the bike for 6 hours, and then just being comfortable running for a long, long period of time at a pace which doesn't necessarily seem fast when you're training, but on race day it will be particularly fast. And it's just gradually working that run pace a little bit quicker each time as you go. And then having the confidence to not walk when your body wants you to walk. So even if you can avoid walking aid stations, that takes a lot of time. So obviously it's important to walk aid stations if you need to get fuel in or if you need to cool the body down. But you don't have to walk every aid station. It's funny. For some of us, we give ourselves an excuse to walk the aid station, but there's actually no good reason to. If we're still running well, then we can just keep running through and just get everything we need to at a slightly slower pace. But I just think being comfortable on the bike, getting comfortable in the water for a long period of time, and then just knowing how to keep running at a steady pace is going to take the most of the time off. And quick transitions. Don't muck around in transition.
Yeah, no picnics in transition.
Yeah, you see a lot of time being used in transition. There was a guy who took an hour in T1 at Kona this year.
Did he have a nap?
I don't know what's going on there. But I think it took about 10 minutes in T2, so he seemed to deal with that quite well.
Maybe he had a sit-down breakfast, who knows. Rob, it's been great catching up. I look forward to talking about your individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time out. Thanks for sharing your story here on the Kona Edge today.
Awesome, Brad. Thanks very much.
This episode of the Kona Edge is brought to you by the Wahoo Kicker. Whether you're looking for the accuracy and control of a direct drive bike trainer or the flexibility and convenience of a wheel-on solution, Kicker and Kicker Snap are two distinct indoor training solutions. Kicker Indoor Trainer's large flywheel uses new algorithms to improve responsiveness and better replicate the sensation of riding on the road. So whether free riding or using online platforms like Zwift and TrainerRoad, you'll have the same experience you feel on your favorite outdoor rides. To check out their phenomenal range, head over to thekonaedge.com/indoor. That's thekonaedge.com/indoor. Thank you for listening to that edition of the Kona Edge. Thank you to Rob as well for sharing his story with us. Before I go, another iTunes review, and we've been getting quite a few in of late, and I really do appreciate them. If you haven't left us one yet, please do. It helps us grow the podcast. This one coming to us from the United States from Paul WB93, saying this podcast is the perfect place for beginners and experts alike. Daily episodes keep you motivated and informed on what the best triathletes do to get to Kona. Be careful, this podcast is how you get addicted to triathlon. Paul, thank you so much for those kind words. Much appreciated, mates. And if you haven't left us one yet, please do head over to thekonaedge.com/iTunes. You can get all the details there. I'm back again tomorrow for myself, Brad Brown. Have yourself a superb day. We'll chat then. Cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for The Kona Edge.
Don't forget, if you'd like to access the commercial-free feed of The Kona Edge, all you need to do is head over to thekonaedge.com/support, become a patron, and you'll get access to that feed right away.